Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, How to Minimize Stress and Maximize Your Wallet This Holiday Season. Our guest today is Tiffany Alice, also known as the Budgetnista. As one of the country's most popular personal financial educators, Tiffany is the founder of the Live Richer Challenge. She specializes in financial education, and Tiffany is the best-selling author of two books, The 1 Week Budget and the Live Richer Challenge. In today's teleclass, Tiffany will address three ways to approach your finances this holiday season, before, during, and after. These include preparation, savings, and recovery. Learn practical and easy tips that you can use right away so you can minimize your stress and maximize the joy of the holiday season. Tiffany Alice, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Good. We're happy to have you, too. Now, it's hard to believe it, but here we are, and there's another holiday season upon us. I heard my first Christmas jingle on the radio the other day, so that's an important cue.
Yes.
And for so many people, the joy of the holiday season can be overtaken by the tremendous anxiety and stress that go with this season of buying, gift-giving, and festive evenings out. And I'm wondering how you recommend people start planning for the season.
Well, I say you should take your cue from Santa. So, you know that song, he makes a list and he checks it twice. I think that if you're going to start purchasing things for the holiday season, start with a list, because the music, the lights, the colors can really make you overspend. And honestly, that's what they're intended for. That's what marketers intend for you to do. But make a list of folks that you'd like to buy things for before you even go shopping. I like to go online and kind of decide ahead of time potential gifts and their cost and write them down and then add up that list, and that's my holiday budget, just so I'm fully aware of what I could expect to spend. So that's the preparation of it all. But you also want to be mindful that what are you going to use? Are you going to be using cash this year? Are you going to use your debit card or your credit card? What does that look like? You shouldn't decide kind of on the spot. You want to decide ahead of time so you can make the best decision. So if you're going to use your credit card, you might say, okay, I have a credit card that I know gives me rewards or cash back or travel miles when I use it. If you're going to use cash, you're going to start saving so you can pull it out and take it with you. And if you're going to use your debit card, you just want to prepare before you go shopping to make sure you have enough so you don't overdraft.
Okay. And when should this planning phase take place? I mean, it's already well into November. Is that too late, or is it one of those better late than never things?
Always better late than never. So, yeah, so if you know that you have a lot of people to plan for, the earlier the better. I'm really not an early planner. I am definitely a few days before Black Friday planner, like, oh, my gosh, as if I'm not surprised every year that the holidays come around this time. So, you know, better late than never. You can still get really great deals if you're a late planner like me.
Okay. Now, this is what I experience. A lot of the gifts creep up and they add up. So it's not only friends and family, but when you start making the list, it's the children's school teachers and piano teachers and coaches, your hairdresser, your housekeeper, the guy who mows the lawn, the kid who feeds the cat when you're away, other service providers, and, you know, on and on it goes. So where do you draw the line, and how do you budget for the ever-expanding holiday list, you know, as you know, you remember, oh, my goodness, I didn't take care of this person or that person?
So the best thing to do is to categorize folks. So I own my own business, so I give gifts to my employees and staff. But what I do is they're in a category, like employees and staff. They all get the same thing. So I've already kind of scouted some things that I'd like to get them. I know what my overall employees and staff budget is. I divide it by the number of people that I have. And then I say, okay, well, this is my gift budget per person. So let's just say it's $30 per person. Then I will look for an awesome gift that doesn't read like 30, but I know, okay, I'm going to purchase everybody the same thing, a mug, or I think last year I found this really pretty necklace because it's all women. And so they loved it, but they didn't realize, you know, I spent well within my budget because they all got the same thing, and it made it easier. And oftentimes if you're going to buy in bulk too, sometimes you can save that way, especially if you're buying locally, because then you can maybe ask for a discount and receive that. So that's one, is that figure out the service providers, you might say everyone's going to get a gift card or everyone's going to get whatever it is, a scarf, but I suggest getting the same thing for all those people. And if you have a large family, like I come from a family, I'm one of five girls, mm-hmm. and so we decided a long time ago to stop buying each other individual gifts. So instead, we do Secret Santa. There's actually a great website. They emailed me the other day. I think it's like a secretsanta.com, where you can put in your name and your email and three potential gifts and then the gift budget. So our family tradition is Thanksgiving, we all collectively decide what are our gift budgets this year. Like, what's the maximum that you're allowed to spend on a sister's gift? And then the Secret Santa emails you and say, hey, you got, you know, your older sister Karen, and here's three things that Karen would like. So it's fun because it, you know, it allows you to get a gift or give a gift, but it also doesn't mean I don't have to buy four presents like I used to. So it's a way to save that way.
Okay. Now, you mentioned gift cards, and here's my conundrum and maybe that of a lot of other people. Are gift cards a cop-out, or is it something that people genuinely welcome because it allows them to decide how to spend the money? And then the other thing I've seen is when somebody gives a contribution to a charitable organization or a cause in your name. What do you think of those two?
So gift cards to me are great for the guy who feeds your cat when you're away and the teacher. So I don't particularly give gift cards to family members and friends, but certainly to folks that we're not particularly close, but I still feel like you gave me great service. So not for that particular like category of person in your life. Give them a gift card, that's fine. And contributing via your whoever loved one's name, to me, that's a great idea if and only if there's a tie to that organization. So maybe your loved one survived breast cancer and you want to do a gift in their name to a breast cancer organization. So that, you know, because if you're, like, I love dogs, but if you gave a contribution to a pound in my name, that wouldn't move me as much as if you gave it to a financial literacy organization for women. So you're wanting to make sure that if you're going to do that, it should be in alignment with their values, not necessarily yours.
Got it. Okay. So, and what do you think about charitable contributions in the workplace? Is that appropriate, or is that just a little bit too personal and offbeat?
Yes, I think that's a little bit too personal. Unless, you know, everybody, some people have their work husband, their work best friend, and so if you are genuinely close to someone at work, that's fine. But typically, if it's just like an office thing, and that's why you find mostly in offices, they do I think it's called the white elephant. I don't know why they call it that, where everyone brings kind of like a, you know, like a unisex gift, and you play a game, and you just grab a gift. So, yes, I would keep it really general for work, unless you genuinely have a relationship with that person outside of work.
Okay. Another situation. What do you do when someone gives you a gift and you haven't thought about reciprocating and you feel the need to race out and buy them something so as to avoid the embarrassment?
So if you forgot to give someone a gift, then if it's someone who you're really close to, then, I mean, there's nothing you could do other than I wouldn't race out unless you know this is something I can get them that would be amazing. The good thing now with the internet, the truth of the matter is you can order something, you know. I mean, don't pay extra as a result of your, you know, that you forgot, but you can still order something. And if you're going to be late, be thoughtful. That's critical. So if I know, oh, my gosh, like today's my sister's birthday, and if I knew that the gift that I was going to get her was going to be late, I would make sure that what I was going to send her is going to be really thoughtful, so that way it would kind of minimize the fact that it's not quite on time.
Okay. And what about, I guess, kind of easy gifts, bottles of wine, baskets of goodies? Is that fair game?
Yes, certainly. There's so many great websites that I personally love and use because oftentimes those websites, when you order, will say your next order is 20% off. So I actually have a folder because I use like different websites like 1-800-Flowers or Harry and David. And so I have a mm-hmm. folder that when I order something from them and they give me that email, so it's usually in your confirmation email. Thank you so much for ordering, Tiffany. If you order again, here's 20% off. I create a folder in my email account called discount gift like coupons. And then what I'll do is when I'm ready to order something again, I'll look in that folder to see, well, who owes me 20 or 30% off? But then you also, if you're going to order online, you must get some sort of extension on your computer. So there's different ones. There's one called Honey. There's also one, Ebates is a great one. And so these extensions attach themselves to your computer, and when you go shopping and you're going to buy something online, usually they'll pop up and say, hey, there's a coupon for this.
Can you explain that? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, that's okay. Can I explain what an extension is?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. How do you find it? What is it?
So, for example, if you go to Ebates right now and you sign up, it's totally free.
You're saying Ebate, not eBay.
No, Ebates. So E-B-A-T-E-S, Ebates. Like a rebate, but it's
Ebates
because it's online.
Okay.
So if you go to Ebates, it's completely free. And then you sign up for Ebates, and they'll ask you, do you want to get a button? And the technical term really is an extension on your computer. And so what that really is that Ebates will put this button on the top of your computer inside right next to the it's like the menu part of your computer right on top and next to, like, history and edit and all the other stuff that's on the top of your computer. And when you're on a website that Ebates gives a discount or cash back for, it will pop up and say, hey, Tiffany, I see you're on Amazon. Do you know if you buy today, Amazon has 10% cash back? And you're like, woohoo. They're like, do you want to activate it? Of course you do. So you click yes. It will refresh itself, and whatever you buy that day, you will get earned 10% cash back. And every quarter, Ebates pays you a big fat check. And so I just got a big fat check the other day, a few hundred dollars, because every quarter, every time I shop online, I want to say probably maybe about 50 or 60% of the time, Ebates has a cash back offer. So it's a win-on-win. So that's one extension that I use. The other one that I use is called Honey. Honey is free. It's Google owns it. You go to joinhoney.com. And whenever I'm shopping, if there's a coupon available, Honey will pop up and say, hey, Tiffany, we found out that this site has 3 or 4 or 8 active coupons. Like, I bought my sister flowers for her birthday. And I went to 1-800-Flowers, and Honey said, there are 8 coupons. Do you want us to try them? And so I click yes, and Honey will literally run through the coupons on your computer when you're ready to check out. And I saved $20 because there was a 20% off coupon that I didn't even know existed. So I sent her flowers, $20 in my pocket. And so using those are going to really help you, especially Cyber Monday and during holiday shopping.
Okay. So is it kind of like an app on your computer? Would that be the right way to think about it?
Mm-hmm. Like an app for your computer. Mm-hmm.
An app. Okay. So to get those coupons, let me just repeat so people can write it down. One is ebates.com, not rebates, but ebates. And the other one is joinhoney.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Tiffany, I'd like to ask you about your business and how you got started and what motivated you to become a financial literacy educator.
Well, I always say I was born into it because my father was a CFO and an accountant, and he and my mom decided early on that they were going to teach their 5 girls how to manage their money, especially him. So growing up, I learned about money just on a daily basis. I can remember my very first financial lesson. I had to be about 5 or 6, and I would always run the water in the bathroom. I would turn on the faucet and walk away. I loved the sound of running water. I think I was feng shui before it was hip. And my dad could not figure out how to get me to stop. And so we didn't have a whole lot of money, and so it was summer. And when the ice cream truck came around, my dad, you would get ice cream based upon your birth order. So on Monday, it was my sister Karen. Tuesday, since I'm second oldest, it was my day. So you would know, oh, it's Tuesday, it's my day to get a dollar from daddy. So it was Tuesday, I went to get my dollar, and my dad said, oh, you just missed a waterman. He left, and I had to give him your dollar because that's how much it costs when you keep the water on. Of course, my 5-year-old self had a meltdown and a temper tantrum, but I never ran the water again because he learned to align what was important to him to what was important to me. I didn't care about the water bill, but I did care about my dollar for ice cream. And so that's how I grew up, with those daily lessons like that. And then when we got older, they became more formal. We would actually sit down once a week and have formal lessons. This is how you budget. This is how you save. And my mom was more practical applications. She would take us food shopping and show us how to coupon and how to find deals. And so I grew up in that kind of environment, and I didn't think anything of it really until I got to college, and my college roommate had bill collectors calling the room. And I remember being so surprised. I didn't even know that could happen. And I remember telling my dad, and he said, yes, that does happen. And it was because her parents had actually opened up credit cards in her name.
Oh, my goodness.
And so my dad coached her. He coached me to coach her about what she could do. And that kind of started this process of, I like helping people. I love teaching people. After college, I became a teacher, but I always kept this financial piece with me, helping my friends. And then post-recession, everyone needed financial help, including me. But I started teaching beyond my friends how to manage post-recession, and that's when my business was born, because it was born out of necessity.
Right. So your parents gave you, even though it may not have been so fun when you were five and didn't get your ice cream, they really gave you a tremendous gift.
Tremendous. And I always commend my dad now that I have a niece and a nephew, because I can't imagine how hard it must have been to teach a lesson when I know me, a five-year-old crying, he probably was like, oh, my heart is breaking, but I want her to learn, you know? And I'm sure I got whatever snack we had at the house. It wasn't like I got nothing, but he wanted me to learn that there was a relationship between my actions and money. So, no, you can't get a dollar, but you can get, you know, an ice pop from the freezer. You just have to wait till next Tuesday for that money in particularly. And so that is the way that I have learned to teach, is to reach people where they currently are financially. No judgment, but here's where you are, and how do I make the financial lesson that it's important, how do I make it important to you? So really figuring out where that person is and why they are where they are, and really trying to make that financial lesson relevant. And so that's my teaching style, and it's done really well. I mean, we have over 500,000 women that follow my brand and my platform, and it's just growing tremendously.
Tiffany, can you briefly describe the Budgetnista for people who aren't familiar with the site, and tell them how to get there, how to get
sure.
to the site?
So the Budgetnista is an online financial education firm. And so I teach in a multitude of ways. Well, it's not just online, but I teach in a multitude of ways. I speak. I'm doing what I do now. I have a podcast. But one of my biggest things is I have a free online challenge that I do every year. And if you go to thebudgetnista.com, you can join the Live Richer Challenge. And my favorite part of the Budgetnista is our online community, which is based on Facebook. It's a couple hundred thousand women in that community, and what we do 24 hours a day is help each other for free. You have a financial question, rent, credit, debt, someone in that group, if it's not me, if it's not another financial expert, it's another dream catcher, which is what we call the community of women who has been in their situation, and now she's here to help you. It's an amazing place. We allow no judgment, no soliciting, no selling. It's just folks who need to receive education, and they're given that. And so I'm really proud of that.
Could you spell Budgetnista just for people who are writing it down?
Sure. So the word budget, B-U-D-G-E-T, and then Nista, N-I-S-T-A.com.
Okay, so that's all one word, thebudgetnista.com.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what is unique about financial literacy education for women versus financial literacy education for men?
Because women are the first teachers in the household. So when you teach a woman, you teach a family. And when you teach a family, you really start to shift a community, and when you shift community, you change cultures. And so I focused on women because, truthfully, that's who was listening.
Uh-huh.
I looked at my analytics, and not that men don't listen, but that's who was listening to me. And I just know, and there's a great study by Prudential that they do every year, financial study about women, and women tend to make up to 70% of the financial choices in the household, even if she doesn't work. So you think about it this way. You're married, your husband says, ooh, you know, we need to get a car. The wife hates the car. You're not getting it. I don't care if he loves it. You're not getting it. The wife loves the car. He doesn't love it. You might still get it. Women have so much power when it comes to the way finances are handled in the household. And so I knew I wanted to shift our culture forward, and I knew that the best way to do so was through women.
Okay, so it doesn't matter if a woman works outside the home or a woman works inside the home. There's no such thing as a woman who doesn't work. It really doesn't matter. The buying power, the purchasing decisions are basically the same. I didn't know that.
Yeah, typically it's still the woman who's making the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. Obviously, you know, we have definitely different family types and stuff, but typically it's still the woman who's making the majority of the decisions, even if it's not her that's actually swiping the card. She might say, okay, so this is what we like, or this is what we're going to have, or, you know, so, you know, whoever your partner might be the one that actually buys it, but typically it's the woman that's making that decision and choice.
Okay, and I'm guessing that the same holds true for the holiday gifts that the family gives to the teachers and the and the coaches. It's the women who go, you know, gee, we need to go make these purchases so we can hand them out at the appropriate time.
Yes, because I don't know that my dad ever even know what we got for the holidays. Like, he'd be just as surprised Christmas morning, like, oh, that's nice.
Is that what I gave you? Oh, nice.
Exactly. So, yes, definitely.
Okay. And, you know, I think of, I mean, not to generalize too much, but, you know, I think of, you know, perhaps the executive, you know, who gives his executive assistant the credit card and says, go out and get something for my wife, or the guy who, you know, on the way to the, you know, dinner on the evening of the, evening before the holiday, you know, stops at the store. Is that still going on?
Yeah, I think so. Because even it's more and more, I find that my friends, my women friends, are making more than their male mates, you know?
Oh.
And so that's me included. You know, I make more than my husband. And yet still, it's still the same, oh, babe, I have to get something for my office, whatever it is. And so it's me that's still, you know, making those choices, you know, for him. Because I just think that it's just cultural, at least for us here in the U.S., you know, that I guess it's just cultural that those things tend to fall on women's shoulders, whether she's the breadwinner, whether she's not the breadwinner, whether she works at home or whether she works outside of the home.
Got it. So you have this enormous online community at your website, thebudgetnista.com, and on your social media platforms. What are some of the specific challenges that the women in your audience face? And how do their challenges inform the things that you write about?
So specific challenges typically are not enough savings, not enough money to manage and to pay bills on time, too much debt, that's a huge one, and credit. And so as a result, one of the things, because I was actually a school teacher before I became the Budgetnista, is that one of the things I pride myself on, like every good teacher, is to define and create my lessons based upon my students' needs, not just based upon my decisions. And so I really listen. The Facebook group, to me, is a great space where I spend most of my time listening to see what are the pain points and then creating resources that can help ease those pain points. I remember when I first created the Live Richer Challenge, a woman emailed me or Facebook messaged me, and she said, I'm in a homeless shelter. I lost my job not too long ago. This is new for me to be in this homeless shelter. Can the challenge help me? And I said, yes, it's completely free. There is no pretend gotcha at the end. Like, you know, so many things you sign up for, and then it's like, oh, and now you have to pay. I said, there is no, that's not there. And then, too, I told her, as long as you have access to internet, you can do the challenge. And, you know, I remember I was really moved, and then 2 years later, actually, it was late last year, she messaged me again on Facebook and said, I don't know if you remember me, but I was homeless, and you told me to do the challenge, and I did, and I got a job, and I saved, and I'm closing on my home this month, and I wanted to thank you. I had tears.
Wow.
From homeless to homeowner. And that's what the Budgetnista is about. It's empowering you to help yourself, because at the end of it all, I am a teacher at heart. I was a school teacher for 10 years, and I still am a teacher. And it's not, I don't want to be your financial guru. I don't want you to have to keep coming back to me. I wanted to teach you the lesson, to simplify it so you can reteach it, so you can be the budget Nisa in someone else's life. That woman has transformed her life. All I did was give her knowledge, but she took it and she used it, and now she's going to be able to transform the lives of people around her, and that is my biggest desire, is to teach you and teach you well enough that you can go on and teach other people.
Wow, that's an amazing story. You know, during the holidays, you know, I think of single moms and single dads and people who are in financial distress who may have not been able to give their children everything they wanted throughout the year. And the holidays particularly are a time when they really don't want to disappoint their children again. And so they stretch. They put things on credit. They put things on layaway. They do things that they really can't afford. What is your advice to those women, and how can we, who are not in that situation, support those women and men and their children?
There's Toys for Tots, which I do every year, and they collect toys for families that would not otherwise be able to afford them, so do that. But then you can also be a resource. I always think that charity starts at home, and at home meaning that your surrounding area. Sometimes you know the neighbor down the street who has three kids is struggling. Can you buy her son a coat? You know, or one of your children's friends, you notice that, you know, you can kind of gauge that they're struggling at home. And so you might offer through his parents. Is there something, you know, like, oh, you know, my son, and they both love to play this video game, and I know he doesn't have one at home. I'd love to give him our extra one that we don't use, you know. So doing things like that, or go to your local. When I taught preschool, I mean, I welcome people coming to the classroom and donating things. So if you don't know anyone personally, look to different schools. Those teachers know which kids in their classrooms could use a little extra help. And you can donate that way right there in your town. And so that's one thing, is to, you know, you can be of service in a specific, concrete way. And then two, if you're a parent that doesn't have, because I've grown up in every type of way possible. I mean, we didn't have much coming up. I mean, I do very well for myself now. But one of the things my parents did when we didn't have much was manage expectations. That, you know, because I didn't know until I got older that people receive more than one Christmas present. I remember being, like, so surprised. Maybe, I want to say, late middle school, early high school. I'm like, you get more than one gift? Because the expectation in our household, because it's five kids, you know, was that you made your list, you're going to get one, and then, you know, you got some stocking stuffers like socks and, you know, gloves, stuff like that, but you know, that you didn't get multiple presents. So I wasn't disappointed on Christmas because I didn't expect to receive five or six different presents. So one, managing expectations, and two, transparency. I remember the year that my dad lost his job right before the holidays in November, and he told us, he sat us all down. I couldn't have been more than, like, I don't know, 10 or 11. He sat us all down and said, you know, I lost my job. So what we're going to do is, but I do have another one lined up, but it's not going to start until the new year. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Christmas in January. And I remember being like, what? So he said, we'll still celebrate, you know, as far as family and friends, but we put up the tree later on in the year in January, and there were presents. And I thought it was amazing. Like, all my friends, you know, like, I had Christmas yesterday. But that's because there was this open communication. So setting up expectations for not getting a ton of gifts, and then open communication, and then making sure that kids want less than you think. You'd be so surprised. I mean, like, teenagers are a little bit different, but when they're younger, they want less than you think. They just want you. They want family. They want friends. They want time. That's how you really show your kids love. So also, too, changing the way you think about the holidays and what it means, because your kids are like what I call a refrigerator. They only have in them what you put in them. And so make sure that what you're putting in is not that Christmas and holidays are about things. It's really about experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I remember knowing a family where each child received an orange, and that's what the family could do. And I have to tell you, that impression has stayed with me forever. And our last question, just on the subject of, you know, the spirit of the season, Where can somebody go if they want to share their good fortune with another family? What's a good place to go for resource?
So you can go to the Goodwill. You can
uh-huh.
go to the United Way.
Okay.
So there's also the YMCA. So mm-hmm. these are organizations that work hand-in-hand with families and individuals that, you know, have a lack of resources. So those are the three that I would suggest. And I would suggest that you do, because holiday season, it can be rough for a number of reasons. And if you can take out the financial piece, you know, people can have peace. And so, yeah, that's what I would suggest. And these are organizations that are well-documented for really helping the community, so you don't have to worry that your donation and that your gift is being sent to the wrong place.
Wonderful. Well, that's all we have time for today. A reminder that today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered using Eventbrite, you will receive an email when the podcast is available. Our thanks to Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista, and thank you for listening.
Thank you. And can I just say one last thing? If you want to find me on any social media platform, it's just the Budgetnista.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.